round their familiar shape. He has not had one of these buns since he was a child. His mother had packed them in his lunches until he told her to stop. He'd rather eat what the other kids were eating.
"Go on,"
Louisa says now.
"Taste."
Slowly he lifts a bun from the box. It is lighter than he remembers, cloud-like, yielding beneath his fingertips. He had forgotten that anything could be so tender. He breaks the bun open, revealing glossy bits of pork and glaze, a secret red heart. When he puts it to his mouth, it is like a kiss, sweet and salty and warm. He does not wait for her to wrap her arms around him, as if he is a small and hesitant child, or for her to coax him into the bedroom. Instead, he pushes her to the floor as he reaches for his fly, tugging her skirt up and pulling her onto him right there in the living room. Louisa moans, arching her back, and James fumbles with the buttons on her blouse, peeling it away and unsnapping her bra and catching her breasts, heavy and round in his cupped hands. As she grinds herself against him, he focuses on her face, on the dark hair that tumbles down into his mouth, on the deep brown eyes that close as her breath grows faster, her thrusts more urgent. This is the sort of woman, he thinks, he should have fallen in love with. A woman who looked just like this. A woman just like him.
"You're the kind of girl I should have married," he whispers afterward.
It is the kind of thing every man says to his lover, but to him it feels like a revelation. Louisa, half asleep in the crook of his arm, does not hear him. But the words snake into her ear, giving her the tangled dreams of every other woman.
"He will leave her. He will marry me. I will make him happy. There will be no other woman."
At home, when Nath and Hannah come downstairs, Marilyn sits motionless at the kitchen table. Though it is past 10 o'clock, she is wearing her bathrobe still, hugged so tightly around her that they cannot see her neck. And they know there is bad news even before she chokes out the word suicide.
"Was it?"
Nath asks slowly, and turning for the stairs without looking at either of them, Marilyn says only,
"They say it was."
For half an hour, Nath pokes at the dregs of cereal in the bottom of his bowl, while Hannah watches him nervously. He has been checking the wolf's house every day, looking for Jack, trying to catch him, though for what, he isn't quite sure. One time he even climbed the porch steps and peeked in the window, but no one is ever home. Jack's VW hasn't puttered down the street in days. At last, Nath pushes the bowl away and reaches for the telephone.
"Get out," he says to Hannah. "I want to make a phone call."
Halfway up the stairs, Hannah pauses, listening to the slow clicks as Nath dials.
"Officer Fisk," he says after a moment.
"This is Nathan Lee. I'm calling about my sister."
His voice drops, and only bits and pieces come through. "Ought to re-examine. Tried to talk to him. Acting evasive." Toward the end, only one word is audible. "Jack. Jack." As if Nath cannot say the name without spitting. After Nath puts the phone down, so hard the bells jangle, he shuts himself in his room. They think he's being hysterical, but he knows there's something there, that there's some connection to Jack, some missing piece of the puzzle. If the police don't believe him, his parents won't either. His father is hardly home these days anyway, and his mother has locked herself in Lydia's room again. Through the wall, he can hear her pacing, like a prowling cat. Hannah raps at his door, and he puts on a record loud until he can't hear the sound of her knuckles or his mother's footsteps anymore. Later,
None of them will remember how the day passes. Only a numbed blur, overshadowed by all that would happen the next day. When evening falls, Hannah opens her door and peers through the crack. A razor of light slices under Nath's door, another under Lydia's. All afternoon, Nath had played his record over and over, but he has finally let it wind to a stop. And now a thick silence, like fog, seeps out onto the landing. Tiptoeing downstairs, she finds the house dark, her father still gone. The kitchen faucet drips, plink, plink, plink. She knows she should turn it off, but then the house will be silent. And at the moment, this is unbearable. Back in her room, she imagines the faucet dripping to itself in the kitchen. With every plink, another bead of water would form on the brushed steel of the sink. She longs to climb into her sister's bed and sleep. But with her mother there, she cannot. And to console herself, Hannah circles the room, checking her treasures, pulling each from its hiding place and examining it. Tucked between mattress and box spring, the smallest spoon from her mother's tea set. Behind the books on the shelf, her father's old wallet, the leather worn thin as tissue. A pencil of Nath's, his tooth marks revealing wood grain beneath the yellow paint. These are her failures. The successes are all gone. The ring on which her father kept his office keys, her mother's best lipstick, rose petal frost. The mood ring Lydia used to wear on her thumb. They were wanted and missed and hunted down in Hannah's hands.
"These aren't a toy," said her father.
"You're too young for makeup," said her mother.
Lydia had been more blunt.
"Stay out of my things."
Hannah had folded her hands behind her back, savoring the lecture, nodding solemnly as she memorized the shape of them standing there beside the bed. When they were gone, she repeated each sentence under her breath, redrawing them in the empty spot where they'd been. All she has left are things unwanted, things unloved. But she doesn't put them back. To make up for them being unmissed, she counts them carefully, twice. Rubs a spot of tarnish from the spoon, snaps and unsnaps the change pocket of the wallet. She's had some of them for years. No one has ever noticed they were gone. They slipped away silently, without even the plink of a drop of water. She knows Nath is convinced, no matter what the police say, that Jack brought Lydia to the lake, that he had something to do with it. That it's his fault. In his mind, Jack dragged her into the boat. Jack pushed her underwater. Jack's fingerprints are pressed into her neck. But Nath is all wrong about Jack. This is how she knows. Last summer, she and Nath and Lydia had been down at the lake. It was hot, and Nath had gone in for a swim. Lydia sunbathed on a striped towel in her swimsuit on the grass, one hand over her eyes. Hannah had been listing Lydia's many nicknames in her mind. Lid, Lids, Liddy, Honey, Sweetheart, Angel. No one ever called Hannah anything but Hannah. There were no clouds, and in the sun, the water had looked almost white, like a puddle of milk. Beside her, Lydia let out a little sigh and settled her shoulders deeper into the towel. She smelled like baby oil, and her skin gleamed. As Hannah squinted, looking for Nath, she thought of possibilities. Hannah Banana, they might call her that. Or something that had nothing to do with her name. Something that sounded strange, but that from them would be warm and personal. Moose, she thought. Bean. Then Jack had strolled by, with his sunglasses perched atop his head, even though it was blindingly bright.
"Better watch out," he
he said to Lydia.
You'll have a white patch on your face if you lie like that.
She laughed and uncovered her eyes and sat up.
Nath not here?
Jack asked, settling down beside them, and Lydia waved out toward the water. Jack pulled his cigarettes from his pocket and lit one. And suddenly, there was Nath, glowering down at them. Water speckled his bare chest, and his hair dripped down onto his shoulders.
What are you doing here? He'd said to Jack.
And Jack stubbed the cigarette out in the grass and put on his sunglasses before looking up.
Just enjoying the sun, he said. Thought I might go for a swim.
His voice didn't sound nervous. But from where she was sitting, Hannah could see his eyes behind the tinted lenses, how they fluttered to Nath, then away. Without speaking, Nath plunked himself right down between Jack and Lydia, bunching his unused towel in his hand. Blades of grass stuck to his wet swimsuit and his calves, like thin streaks of green paint.
You're going to burn, he said to Lydia. Better put on your t-shirt.
I'm fine. Lydia shielded her eyes with her hand again.
You're already turning pink, Nath said.
His back was to Jack, as if Jack weren't there at all.
Here, and here.
He touched Lydia's shoulder, then her collarbone. I'm fine, Lydia said again, swatting him away with her free hand and lying back again. You're worse than Mom. Stop fussing. Leave me alone. Something caught Hannah's eye then, and she didn't hear what Nath said in return. A drop of water trickled out of Nath's hair, like a shy little mouse, and ran down the nape of his neck. It made its slow way between his shoulder blades, and where his back curved, it dropped straight down, as if it had jumped off a cliff, and splashed onto the back of Jack's hand. Nath, facing away from Jack, didn't see it, and neither did Lydia, peeking up through the slits between her fingers. Only Hannah, arms curled around knees a little way behind them, saw it fall. In her ears, it made a noise like a cannon shot, and Jack himself jumped. He stared at the drop of water without moving, as if it were a rare insect that might fly away. Then, without looking at any of them, he raised his hand to his mouth and touched his tongue to it, as if it were honey. It happened so quickly that if she were a different person, Anna might have wondered if she'd imagined it. No one else saw. Nath was still turned away. Lydia had her eyes shut now against the sun. But the moment flashed lightning bright to Hannah. Years of yearning had made her sensitive, the way a starving dog twitches its nostrils at the faintest scent of food. She could not mistake it. She recognized it at once. Love. One-way, deep adoration that bounced off and did not bounce back. Careful, quiet love that didn't care and went on anyway. It was too familiar to be surprising. Something deep inside her stretched out and curled around Jack like a shawl. But he didn't notice. His gaze moved away to the far side of the lake, as if nothing had happened. She stretched her leg and touched her bare foot to Jack's, big toe to big toe. And only then did he look down at her.
Hey, kiddo,
he said, ruffling her hair with his hand. Her whole scalp had tingled, and she thought her hair might stand up like static electricity. At the sound of Jack's voice, Nath glanced over.
Hannah, he said.
And without knowing why, she stood up. Nath nudged Lydia with his foot.
Let's go.
Lydia groaned, but picked up her towel and the bottle of baby oil.
Stay away from my sister,
Nath said to Jack, very quietly, as they left. Lydia, already walking away, shaking grass off her towel, didn't hear, but Hannah had. It sounded like Nath had meant her, Hannah. But she knew he'd really meant Lydia. When they stopped at the corner to let a car pass, she peeked back over her shoulder. One quick glance too fast for Nath to notice. Jack was watching them go. Anyone would think he was looking at Lydia, with the towel slung around her hips now like a sarong. Hannah shot him a little smile, but he didn't smile back, and she could not tell if he hadn't seen her, or if her one little smile hadn't been enough. Now she thinks of Jack's face as he looked down at his hands, as if something important had happened to them. No. Nath is wrong. Those hands could never have hurt anyone. She is sure of it. On Lydia's bed, Marilyn hugs her knees like a little girl, trying to leap the gaps between what James has said and what he thinks and what he meant. Your mother was right all along. You should have married someone more like you. With such bitterness in his voice that it choked her. These words sound familiar, and she mouths them silently, trying to place them. Then she remembers. On their wedding day, in the courthouse, her mother had warned her about their children, how they wouldn't fit in anywhere. "You'll regret it," she had said, as if they would be flippered and imbecile and doomed. And out in the lobby, James must have heard everything. Marilyn had said only, "My mother just thinks I should marry someone more like me," then brushed it away, like dust onto the floor. But those words had haunted James. How they must have wound around his heart, binding tighter over the years, slicing into the flesh. He had hung his head like a murderer, as if his blood were poison, as if he regretted that their daughter had ever existed. When James comes home, Marilyn thinks, speechless with aching, she will tell him, "I would marry you 100 times if it gave us Lydia, 1,000 times. You cannot blame yourself for this." Except James does not come home. Not at dinner. Not at nightfall. Not at 1 when the bars in town close. All night, Marilyn sits awake, pillows propped against the headboard, waiting for the sound of his car in the driveway, his footsteps on the stairs. At 3, when he still hasn't come home, she decides she will go to his office. All the way to campus, she pictures him huddled in his wheeled armchair, crushed with sadness, soft cheek pressed to hard desk. When she finds him, she thinks, she will convince him this is not his fault. She will bring him home. But when she pulls into the lot, it is empty. She circles his building 3 times, checking all the spots where he usually parks, then all the faculty lots, then all the meters nearby. No sign of him anywhere. In the morning, when the children come downstairs, Marilyn sits stiff-necked and bleary-eyed at the kitchen table. "Where is Daddy?" Hannah asks, and her silence is enough of an answer. It is the 4th of July. Everything is closed. James has no friends on the faculty. He is not close with their neighbors. He loathes the dean. Could he have been in an accident? Should she call the police? Nath rubs his bruised knuckle across the crack in the counter and remembers the perfume on his father's skin, his reddening cheeks, his sharp and sudden fury. "I don't owe him anything," he thinks. But even so, he has the feeling of leaping off a high cliff when he swallows hard and says at last, "Mom, I think I know where he is." At first, Marilyn will not believe it. It is so unlike James. Besides, she thinks, he doesn't know anyone. He does not have any female friends. There are no women in the history department at Middlewood, only a few women professors at the college at all. When would James meet another woman?
And a terrible thought occurs to her.
She takes down the phone book and skims down the C's until she finds it. The only Chan in Middlewood. L. Chan, 105 4th Street, number 3A. A telephone number. She nearly reaches for the receiver, but what would she say?
Hello, do you know where my husband is?
Without shutting the phone book, she grabs her keys from the counter.
Stay here, she says, both of you. I'll be back in half an hour.
4th Street is near the college, a student-heavy area of town, and even as she turns down it, squinting at building numbers, Marilyn has no plan.
Maybe, she thinks, Nath is all wrong.
Maybe she is making a fool of herself. She feels like an overtuned violin, strung too tight, so that even the slightest vibration sets her humming. Then, in front of number 97, she sees James's car, parked beneath a scrubby maple. 4 stray leaves dot its windshield. Now she feels strangely calm. She parks the car, lets herself into 105, and climbs the steps to the 3rd floor, where with one steady fist she raps at 3A. It is nearly 11, and when the door opens, just wide enough to reveal Louisa, still in a pale blue robe, Marilyn smiles.
Hello, she says.
It's Louisa, isn't it?
Louisa Chan?
I'm Marilyn Lee. When Louisa does not respond, she adds,
James Lee's wife.
Oh, yes, Louisa says. Her eyes flick away from Marilyn's.
I'm sorry, I'm not dressed yet.
I can see that. Marilyn sets her hand on the door, holding it open with one palm.
I'll just take a moment of your time. You see, I'm looking for my husband.
He didn't come home last night.
Oh?
Louisa swallows hard, and Marilyn pretends not to notice.
How terrible. You must be very worried.
I am. Very worried. She keeps her eyes trained on Louisa's face. They have met only twice before, in passing at the college Christmas party, and then at the funeral. And Marilyn studies her carefully now. Long, ink-colored hair, long lashes over downturned eyes, small mouth like a doll's. A shy little thing. As far from me, she thinks with a twinge, as a girl could be.
Do you have any idea where he might be?
Louisa blushes bright pink, and Marilyn feels almost sorry for her, she is so transparent.
Why would I know?
You're his assistant, aren't you? You work together every day? She pauses. He speaks of you so often at home.
He does?
Confusion and pleasure and surprise mingle in Louisa's face, and Marilyn can see exactly what is running through her mind. That Louisa, she's so smart, so talented, so beautiful.
She thinks, oh, Louisa, how young you are.
Well, Louisa says at last,
have you checked his office?
He wasn't there earlier, Marilyn says. Perhaps he's there now. She sets her hand on the doorknob.
Could I use your telephone?
Louisa's smile vanishes.
I'm sorry, she says. My phone's actually not working right now.
She looks desperately at Marilyn, as if wishing she would just give up and go away. Marilyn waits, letting Louisa fidget. Her hands have stopped shaking.
Inside, she feels a quiet, smoldering rage.
Thank you anyway, she says. You've been very helpful.
She lets her eyes drift past Louisa, to the tiny sliver of living room she can see through the doorway. And Louisa glances back over her shoulder nervously, as if James might have wandered out of the bedroom unawares.
If you see him, Marilyn adds, raising her voice, tell my husband that I'll see him at home.
Louisa swallows again.
I will, she says.
And at last, Marilyn lets her shut the door.
9.
A few months earlier, a different illicit romance had been brewing. To Nath's immense disapproval, all spring Lydia had spent her afternoons out with Jack in his car, driving round and round town, or parking the VW near the green quad of the college, or by the playground, or in a deserted parking lot. Despite what Nath thought, to Lydia's smug satisfaction, despite the whispers now and then when someone glimpsed her climbing into Jack's car,
she's not, is she? No way. Her? Can't be.
Despite Lydia's own expectations, the truth was much less scandalous. While the college students scurried to class, or kindergartners scaled the slide, or bowlers trudged into the alley for a quick after-work game, something happened that Lydia had never expected. She and Jack talked. As they sat smoking, feet propped on the dashboard, she told him stories about her parents. How in second grade, she'd traced the diagram of the heart from the encyclopedia, labeling each ventricle with magic marker, and her mother had pinned it up on her bedroom wall as if it were a masterpiece. How at 10, her mother had taught her to take a pulse. How at 12, her mother had persuaded her to skip Cat Malone's birthday party, the only one she'd ever been invited to finish her science fair project. How her father had insisted she go to the freshman dance and bought her a dress, and she had spent the night standing in the darkest corner of the gym, counting the minutes until she could go home. How late was late enough? 8:30? 9? At first, she tried not to mention Nath, remembering how Jack hated him. But she could not talk about herself without Nath. And to her surprise, Jack asked questions. Why did Nath want to be an astronaut? Was he quiet at home like he was at school? So she told him how, after the moon landing, he had bounded across the lawn, pretending to be Neil Armstrong for days. How in sixth grade, he'd convinced the librarian to let him borrow from the adults section and brought home textbooks on physics, flight mechanics, aerodynamics. How he'd asked for a telescope for his 14th birthday and received a clock radio instead. How he'd saved his allowance and bought himself one. How, sometimes at dinner, Nath never said a word about his day because their parents never asked. Jack absorbed everything, lighting her next cigarette as she flicked the old bud out the window, tossing her his pack when she ran out. Week after week, she tamped down a flare of guilt at making Nath seem even more pathetic, because talking about Nath kept her in Jack's car every afternoon. And every afternoon she spent in Jack's car bothered Nath more and more. Now, in mid-April, Jack had started teaching Lydia to drive. At the end of the month, she would be 16. Think of the gas pedal and the clutch as partners, he said. When one goes up, the other goes down. Under Jack's direction, Lydia let the clutch out slowly and tapped the gas with her toe, and the VW crept forward across the empty parking lot of the roller rink on Route 17. Then the engine stalled, slamming her shoulders into the seat back. Even after a week of practice, the violence of this moment still surprised her, how the whole car jolted and fell silent, as if it had had a heart attack.
Try again,
Jack said. He set his foot on the dashboard and pushed in the cigarette lighter.
Nice and slow. Clutch in, gas out.
At the far end of the parking lot, a police car pulled in and executed a neat U-turn, pointing its nose toward the street.
They're not looking for us, Lydia told herself.
Route 17, out at the edge of town, was a notorious speed trap. Still, the black and white car kept catching her eye. She turned the key and restarted the car and stalled again, almost at once.
Try again,
Jack repeated, pulling a pack of Marlboros from his pocket.
You're in too much of a hurry.
She had not realized this, but it was true. Even the 2 weeks until her birthday, when she could get her learner's permit, seemed eternal. When she had her license, Lydia thought, she could go anywhere. She could drive across town, across Ohio, all the way to California if she wanted to. Even with Nath gone, her mind shied from the thought. She would not be trapped alone with her parents. She could escape any time she chose. Just thinking about it made her legs twitch, as if itching to run.
Slowly,
she thought, taking a deep breath. Just like partners, one goes up, the other goes down. James had promised to teach her to drive their sedan as soon as she had her permit. But Lydia did not want to learn in their car. It was sedate and docile, like a middle-aged mare. It buzzed gently, like a watchful chaperone if you didn't fasten your seatbelt.
After you get your license, her father said, we'll let you take the car out on Friday nights with your friends.
If you keep your grades up, her mother would add, if she was around. Lydia sank the clutch to the floor and started the engine again and reached for the gear shift. It was almost 5:30, and her mother would expect her soon. When she tried to let out the clutch, her foot slipped off the pedal. The car bucked and died. The eyes of the policeman and the cruiser flicked toward them, then back toward the road. Jack shook his head.
We can try again tomorrow.
The coils of the lighter glowed as he pulled it from the socket and pressed a cigarette to its center, the end singeing black against the hot metal, then orange, as if the color had bled. He passed it to Lydia, and once they had switched seats, lit another for himself.
You almost had it, he said,
wheeling the car toward the exit of the parking lot. Lydia knew this was a lie, but she nodded. Yeah, she said hoarsely. Next time. As they turned onto Route 17, she blew a long column of smoke out toward the police car.
So are you going to tell your brother we've been hanging out, and I'm not such a bad guy?
Jack asked when they were nearly home. Lydia grinned. She suspected that Jack still took other girls out. Some days, he and the VW were nowhere to be found. But with her, he was practically gentlemanly. He had never even held her hand. So what if they were only friends? Most days, she was the one climbing into his car, and she knew this had not escaped Nath's attention. At dinner time, while she spun stories for her mother about her grades and her extra credit project, or for her father about Shelley's new perm or Pam's obsession with David Cassidy, Nath watched her, half angry, half afraid, as if he wanted to say something but didn't know how. She knew what he was thinking, and she let him. Some evenings, she came into Nath's room, plopped down on his windowsill, and lit a smoke, daring him to say something. Now, Lydia said, he would never believe me. She hopped out a block early, and Jack turned the corner and pulled into his driveway while she trotted home, as if she'd walked the whole way herself.
Tomorrow, she thought, she would pop the car into first and they would roll across the parking lot, white lines whipping beneath the wheels. On top of the pedals, her feet would feel comfortable, her insteps supple. Soon she would glide down the highway, shifting into third, then fourth, speeding off somewhere all on her own. It didn't turn out that way. At home, in her room, Lydia flicked on the record player, where the album Hannah had given her for Christmas was already in place. To Lydia's surprise, she had been playing it over and over. She set the needle an inch and a half from the edge, aiming for the start of her favorite song, but overshot, and Paul Simon's voice suddenly soared into the room. Hey, let your honesty shine, shine, shine. A faint knocking punched through the music, and Lydia twisted the volume knob as loud as it would go. In a moment, Marilyn, knuckles smarting, opened the door and leaned in. Lydia! Lydia! When her daughter didn't turn around, Marilyn lifted the arm of the record player and the room went quiet, the record spinning helplessly beneath her hand. That's better. How can you think with that on? It doesn't bother me. Are you done with your homework already? No answer. Marilyn pursed her lips. You know, you shouldn't be listening to music if you haven't finished your schoolwork. Lydia picked at a hangnail. I'll do it after dinner. Better get started now, don't you think? Make sure you have time to finish it all and do a careful job. Marilyn's face softened. Sweetheart, I know high school may not feel important, but it's the foundation of the rest of your life. She perched on the arm of Lydia's chair and stroked her daughter's hair. It was so crucial to make her understand, but she didn't know how. A quiver had crept into Marilyn's voice, but Lydia didn't notice. Trust me, please. Don't let your life slip away from you. Oh, God, Lydia thought. Not again. She blinked fiercely and focused on the corner of her desk, where some article her mother had clipped months ago still sat, furred now with dust. Look at me. Marilyn cupped Lydia's chin in her hand and thought of all the things her own mother had never said to her, the things she had longed her entire life to hear. You have your whole life in front of you. You can do anything you want. She paused, looking over Lydia's shoulder at the shelf crammed with books, the stethoscope atop the bookshelf, the neat mosaic of the periodic table. When I'm dead, that's all I want you to remember. She meant, I love you. I love you. But her words sucked the breath from Lydia's lungs. When I'm dead. All through that long-ago summer, she had thought her mother might really be dead. And those weeks and months had left a persistent, insistent ache in her chest, like a pulsing bruise. She had promised anything her mother wanted, anything at all, as long as her mother stayed. I know, Mom. She said. I know. She tugged her notebook from her book bag. I'll get started. That's my girl. Marilyn kissed her on the head, right where her hair parted, and Lydia inhaled at last. Shampoo, detergent, peppermint. A scent she had known all her life. A scent that every time she smelled it, she realized she had missed. She curled her arms around Marilyn's waist, pulling her close, so close she could feel her mother's heartbeat against her cheek. Enough of that, Marilyn said at last, swatting Lydia playfully on the behind. Get to work. Supper will be ready in half an hour. All through dinner, the conversation with her mother writhed inside Lydia. She steeled herself with one thought,
Later, she would tell Nath all about it, and then she would feel better.
She excused herself early, leaving half her plate untouched.
I've got to finish my physics, she said, knowing her mother wouldn't protest.
Then, on her way upstairs, she passed the hall table, where her father had set the mail just before supper, and one envelope caught her eye. A Harvard seal in the corner, and beneath that, admissions office. She slid it open with her finger.
Dear Mr. Lee, she read, we look forward to you joining us on campus April 29th to May 2nd, and have matched you with a host student for your visit.
She knew it had been coming, but it had not seemed real until now.
The day after her birthday.
Without thinking, she ripped the letter and envelope in two. And at that moment, Nath came out of the kitchen.
Thought I heard you out here, he said. Can I borrow?
He spotted the red crest on the torn envelope, the letter in pieces in Lydia's hand, and froze. Lydia flushed.
It's nothing important. I didn't...
But she had crossed a line, and both of them knew it.
Gimme that!
Nath snatched the letter.
This is mine. Jesus! What are you doing?
I just...
Lydia could not think of a way to finish. Nath pieced the ragged edges together, as if he could make the letter whole again.
This is about my visit. What the hell were you thinking? That if I didn't get this, I couldn't go?
Put so starkly, it sounded foolish and pathetic, and tears began to form in the corners of Lydia's eyes, but Nath did not care. It was as if Lydia had been stealing from him.
Get it through your head. I'm going. I'm going that weekend, and I'm going in September.
He bolted for the stairs.
Jesus Christ, I can't get out of this house fast enough.
In a moment, his door slammed overhead, and although Lydia knew he wouldn't open it, nor did she know what she would say if he did, this did not stop her from knocking again and again and again. The next afternoon in Jack's car, she stalled the engine over and over until Jack said they'd better call it a day.
I know what to do, Lydia said. I just can't do it.
Her hand had cramped into a claw around the gear shift, and she pried it away.
Partners, she reminded herself. The gas and the clutch were partners.
It struck her now. That wasn't true. If one went up, the other had to go down. That was how everything went. Her grade in physics had gone up to a C-, but her grade in history had slipped to a D. Tomorrow, her English essay was due. 2,000 words on Faulkner. But she could not even find her book. Maybe there was no such thing as partners, she thought. From all her studying, this flashed through her mind. For every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. One went up, and the other went down. One gained, the other lost. One escaped, the other was trapped forever. The thought haunted her for days. Although Nath, cooled down now from the incident of the letter, was speaking to her again, she could not bear to mention it, even to apologize. Each night after dinner, despite her mother's most pointed nagging, she stayed in her room alone instead of tiptoeing down the hall in search of sympathy. The night before her birthday, James rapped at her door.
You've seemed down the past couple of weeks, he said.
He held out a little blue velvet box the size of a deck of cards.
I thought an early present might cheer you up.
It had taken him some time, this gift, and he was proud of it. He had gone so far as to ask Louisa for advice on what a teenage girl might like, and this time he was sure Lydia would love it. Inside the box lay a silver heart on a chain.
"It's beautiful," Lydia said, surprised.
At last, a present that was a present. Not a book, not a hint. Something she wanted, not something they wanted for her. This was the necklace she had longed for at Christmas. The chain slid through her fingers like a stream of water, so lithe it felt almost alive. James touched her dimple with a fingertip and twisted it, an old joke of his. "It opens." Lydia flipped the locket open and froze. Inside were two pictures the size of her thumbnail. One of her father, one of her, dolled up for the 9th grade dance the year before. All the way home, she had told him what a wonderful time she'd had. The photo of her father smiled broadly, fondly, expectantly. The photo of herself looked away, serious, resentful, sullen.
"I know this year's been tough, and your mother's been asking a lot of you," James said. "Just remember, school isn't everything. It's not as important as friendship or love."
Already he could see a faint line worrying a crease between Lydia's brows, dark circles blooming beneath her eyes from late-night studying. He wanted to smooth that wrinkle with his thumb, to wipe the shadows away like dust.
"Every time you look at this,
just remember what really matters.
Every time you look at this, I want you to smile. Promise?"
He fiddled with the clasp of the necklace, struggling with the tiny spring loop.
"I wanted gold, but a reliable source told me everyone was wearing silver this year," he said.
Lydia ran a finger along the velvet lining of the box. Her father was so concerned with what everyone was doing.
"I'm so glad you're going to the dance, honey. Everyone goes to the dance. Your hair looks so pretty that way, Liddy. Everyone has long hair these days, right?"
Anytime she smiled.
"You should smile more. Everyone likes a girl who smiles."
As if a dress and long hair and a smile could hide everything about her that was different. If her mother let her go out like the other girls, she thought, it might not matter what she looked like. Jackie Harper had one blue eye and one green, and she'd been voted most social last year. Or if she looked like everyone else, perhaps it would not matter that she had to study all the time, that she could not go out on the weekends until she'd done all her homework, that she could not go out with boys at all. One or the other might be overcome. To be pulled both ways, no dress, no book, no locket could help that.
"There we go,"
James said, the catch springing open at last. He refastened it at her nape, and the metal cut a line of cold, like a ring of ice around her throat.
"What do you think? You like it?"
Lydia understood. This was meant to remind her of all he wanted for her. Like a string tied around her finger, only this lay around her neck.
"It's beautiful,"
she whispered, and James mistook her hoarseness for deep gratitude.
"Promise me," he said, "that you'll get along with everyone. You can never have too many friends."
And Lydia closed her eyes and nodded. The next day, in honor of her birthday, she wore the necklace, as her father suggested.
"Right after school," James told her, "I'll take you over to get your permit, and we'll have our first driving lesson before dinner,"
her mother said. "And after dinner, we'll have cake, and I've got some special presents for the birthday girl." Which meant books, Lydia thought. That night, Nath would pack his suitcase. All day she consoled herself. "In 6 hours, I will have my permit. In 2 weeks, I will be able to drive away." At 3 o'clock, her father pulled up in front of the school. But when Lydia picked up her book bag and started for the sedan, she was surprised to see someone already in the passenger seat. A Chinese woman. A girl, really, with long black hair.
"So nice to finally meet you," the girl said as Lydia climbed into the back seat. "I'm Louisa, your dad's teaching assistant."
James paused the car to let a cluster of junior boys meander across the street.
"Louisa has an appointment, and since I was coming this way anyway, I offered her a ride."
"I shouldn't have said yes," Louisa said. "I should have just canceled it. I hate the dentist."
As he crossed in front of the car, one of the juniors grinned at them through the windshield and pulled his eyes into slits with his fingers. The others laughed, and Lydia scrunched down in her seat. It occurred to her. The boys probably thought Louisa was her mother. Squirming, she wondered if her father was embarrassed, too. But in the front seat, James and Louisa hadn't noticed a thing.
"$10 says you don't even have one cavity," James said.
"$5, Louisa said. "I'm just a poor grad student, not a rich professor."
She patted his arm playfully, and the tenderness in her face shocked Lydia. Her mother looked at her father that way, late at night, when he was caught up in his reading and she leaned against his armchair affectionately before nudging him to bed. Louisa's hand lingered on her father's arm, and Lydia stared at them. Her father and this girl, cozy in the front seat like a little married couple, a tableau framed by the bright screen of the windshield, and she thought suddenly, "This girl is sleeping with my father." It had never occurred to her before to think of her father as a man with desires. Like all teenagers, she preferred, despite her very existence, to imagine her parents as eternally chaste. But there was something in the way her father and Louisa touched, in their easy banter that shocked her innocent sensibilities. To her, the faint crackle between them blazed so hotly that her cheeks flushed. They were lovers. She was sure of it. Louisa's hand was still on her father's arm, and her father didn't move, as if the caress were nothing unusual. In fact, James did not even notice. Marilyn often rested her hand on him just this way, and the feeling was too familiar to stand out. For Lydia, however, the way her father kept looking straight ahead, eyes still scanning the road, was all the confirmation she needed.
"So I hear it's your birthday today," Louisa said,
twisting toward the back seat again.
16. I'm sure this will be a very special year for you."
Lydia didn't respond, and Louisa tried again.
"Do you like your necklace? I helped pick it out. Your dad asked my advice on what you might like."
Lydia hooked two fingers beneath the chain, fighting the urge to yank it from her neck.
"How would you know what I like? You don't even know me."
Louisa blinked.
"I had some ideas. I mean, I've heard so much about you from your dad."
Lydia looked her directly in the eye.
"Really?" she said. "Daddy's never mentioned you."
"Come on, Liddy," James said. "You've heard me talk about Louisa, how smart she is, how she never lets those undergrads get away with anything."
He smiled at Louisa, and Lydia's vision blurred.
"Daddy, where did you drive after you got your license?" she asked suddenly.
In the rearview mirror, James's eyes flicked open in surprise.
"To school, to swim practices and meets," he said, "and on errands sometimes."
"But not on dates?"
"No,"
James said. His voice cracked briefly, like a teenage boy's.
"No, not on dates."
Lydia felt small and sharp and mean, like a tack.
"Because you didn't date, right?"
Silence.
"Why not?" Didn't anybody want to go out with you?
This time, James kept his eyes on the road before them, and his hands on the wheel stiffened, elbows locking.
Oh, now, Louisa said. I don't believe that for a minute.
She put her arm on James's elbow again, and this time she kept it there until they reached the dentist's office. Until James stopped the car and said, to Lydia's outrage,
See you tomorrow.
Despite his daughter glowering in the back seat, James did not realize anything was wrong. At the DMV, he kissed her on the cheek and took a chair.
You'll do fine, he said. I'll be right here when you're done.
Thinking about how excited Lydia would be, permit in hand, he had forgotten all about the moment in the car. Lydia herself, still roiling with the secret she was sure she had discovered, turned away without a word. In the test room, a woman handed her an exam booklet and a pencil and told her to take any empty seat. Lydia made her way toward the back corner of the room, stepping over book bags and purses and the legs of the boy in the next to last row. Everything her father had ever said to her bounced back in a new tone.
You can never have too many friends.
She thought of her mother, sitting at home, doing the laundry, filling in a crossword, while her father, she was furious with him, furious with her mother for letting this happen, furious with everyone. At that moment, Lydia realized the room had gone silent. Everyone's head was bent over the test. She looked up at the clock, but it told her nothing. Not when they started, not when the test ended, only the time. 3:41. The second hand tick, tick, ticked around from 11 to 12, and the minute hand, like a long iron needle, jumped forward another notch. 3:42. She flipped her booklet open. What color is a stop sign? She filled in the circle for B, red. What must you do if you see or hear an emergency vehicle coming from any direction? In her haste, the pencil slipped outside the bubble in a jagged claw. A few rows up, a girl with pigtails rose, and the woman at the front gestured her into the next room. A moment later, the boy sitting next to her did the same. Lydia looked down at her booklet again. 20 questions, 18 left to go. If your car begins to skid, you should... All of the answers seemed plausible. She skipped ahead. When are roads and highways most slippery? How much distance should you leave between yourself and the vehicle in front of you under good road conditions? To her right, a man with a mustache closed his booklet and put down his pencil. C, Lydia guessed. A, D. On the next page, she found a list of sentences she could not complete. When driving behind a large truck on the freeway, you should... To safely navigate a curve, you should... When backing up, you should... She repeated each question to herself and got stuck on the last words, like a scratched record. You should, you should, you should. Then someone touched her shoulder, softly. And the woman from the front of the room said, I'm sorry, dear. Time's up. Lydia kept her head bent over the desk, as if the words would not be true until she saw the woman's face. A dark spot formed in the middle of the paper, and it took her a moment to realize it was the mark of a tear, that it was hers. She wiped the paper clean with her hand, then wiped her cheek. Everyone else had gone. It's okay, the woman said. You only need 14 right. But Lydia knew she had filled in only 5 circles. In the next room, where a man fed answer sheets into the scoring machine, she jabbed her finger with the tip of her pencil.
18 right, the man said to the girl in front of her. Take this to the counter, and they'll take your picture and print your permit.
Congratulations.
The girl gave a happy little skip as she passed through the door, and Lydia wanted to slap